Good evening, and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. Two doctors charged with draining Loreto Hospital of millions of dollars, reportedly living large on the run in Dubai. The mayor wants to curb smoking on the CTA, sparking questions from an alderman who's already announced a similar effort. And the city makes a major investment to improve its shelter system for Chicagoans experiencing homelessness. We're talking about all that and much more this week, and we've got a great panel here to help us do it. They are Michael Liptrot from Block Club Chicago, Kelly Bauer, also from Block Club Chicago, Justin Kaufman from Axios, and Maggie Hendricks from Yahoo Sports. Let's get right to it. Thank you all for being here. So Kelly, as we know, prosecutors say Anosh Ahmed and Samir Suhail stole $15 million from Loreto Hospital on the west side and then illegally steered another $19 million in contracts to Suhail. So did some great reporting here at Block Club. They're now in Dubai. Why did they end up there? What's life like for these guys these days?
Our reporting shows that they fled to Dubai shortly before charges came down in May and June of 2024 and even before that. And in Dubai, they're living quite interesting lifestyles. Mr. Suhail has a luxury plastic surgery clinic where they do all kinds of things, you know, cat eye surgery, salmon sperm facials. And we have photos and videos of him wearing $250,000 watches, $500 designer sunglasses. And then Mr. Ahmed has been living a little quieter on social media, but has been issuing dozens and dozens and dozens of news releases about his purported charitable and business activities. And they often include these edited photos of him where it's his face put onto somebody else's body. And what we noted is that more and more these news releases are appealing to President Donald Trump, that he is describing himself as a Republican figure and someone who has strong conservative values. But what our reporting found is that he hasn't voted in Harris County, where he lived, or in Chicago, where he also lived, apart from the 2020 election, and that his political donations have been bipartisan, going to a Democrat and a Republican. He also had no public political roles before this. So it's very interesting to see what's happening versus what he says.
Well, and as we know, you know, they have connections to the Trump family dating back years, you know, reportedly helping one of the president's sons get vaccinated. You know, with all these sorts of connections, all the ways that, you know, he's describing himself, do you think there's maybe a bid for clemency here?
Absolutely. I think that these are direct appeals to President Donald Trump in hopes that he will be able to get a pardon either before or after, you know, conviction. And I spoke to an expert, actually several experts, who said that in their opinion, they see the same thing. They said that there are a lot of norms being destroyed in the world of clemency and that it's not unthinkable that even with the charges they face, that they could be pardoned and be able to return to the United States.
And that's what's difficult about this story, is that they're ripping off Loreto Hospital, which accused of ripping off. Mm-hmm. But the point being, that is a safety net hospital. That right. is to the point where if there's, we're talking about clemency, we're talking about pardons, but at the end of the day, they're fraudulent accusations of COVID tests or COVID vaccines and everything in between, stealing from the lowest of the low. So I wonder if the president will take that into account if you're talking about clemency and pardons. Maybe not this president, but there are, you know, the idea that what the actual crime was, or the crime, you know, if there is a conviction. I mean, that to me is the question.
Yeah, not exactly a hospital flush with cash in, say, you know, a rich North Shore suburb or something.
Yeah, I think that's something that it's always important to remind folks of, is this isn't just a story about them living in Trump Tower or something like this. These are the most vulnerable people in our city are served by Loreto Hospital, and millions were taken from that hospital that's supposed to care for them.
Especially think about just how politicized this would come in the case of any clemency happening, where the reality of this is taxpayer money mm-hmm. at the center of these charges. And like you said, when it comes to this being a safety net hospital, and then the disparities when we yeah. look at the west side of Chicago, and just the political fallout, should Trump really rise up to those charges for clemency or trying to get clemency. And it's sad just seeing that that's kind of the way to go, from allegedly Eric Adams to P. Diddy to now this, that is like if you end up in hot water, just make an appeal to the president and just hope for the best. It's really sad.
Yeah. It'll be very interesting to see whether anything actually reaches the president's desk. Well, Michael, you reported this week on the city's new efforts to improve conditions in homeless shelters. We've got a bit here from Mayor Brandon Johnson of what he had to say about this major new investment.
Together, we are thrilled to announce the largest ever investment in shelter infrastructure improvements and modernization in Chicago's history.
So this sounds like a pretty significant step here. What are the details on this effort?
Yeah, so $40 million through an initiative by DFSS, and a lot of this going towards adding dignity and upgrades to a lot of facilities across the city. And when I say dignity, it comes in the form of individual rooms where a lot of the shelters in the city have congregate housing, where you and even your family, if should you have entered a shelter, may get put in more of a dorm style housing. And when people think about some of the challenges socially for keeping people in shelters, it's because people don't feel safe or comfortable. So now having your own bedroom, your own storage, as well as a bathroom, is going to help people feel dignified. And a lot of these shelters are really old. And some, as mentioned, I was at that press conference, some shelters don't have air conditioning and have fans put up. That was at St. Leonard's on the near west side. They're going through a multi-million dollar expansion to add a lot of these amenities that we just take for granted. And so not only when we think about homelessness, but reentry for returning citizens and also women's shelters, this is going to help a lot of Chicagoans out.
Yeah, that's one of the things you hear often from folks, you know, saying that I don't want to go to a shelter because it is a congregate setting, because right. they're all sort of thrown together. Well, the mayor also signed an executive order this week that's aimed at curbing smoking on the CTA. Let's listen to a little bit of that.
I've charged our city departments and agencies with putting forth recommendations for the short-term, long-term interventions to increase public safety and end smoking on our transit system.
So, you know, Justin, this is something riders have been complaining about for years and years. I mean, why tackle it now?
I don't, you know, and also an executive order. You know, you think about just in the country right now, so many executive orders. That just seems to be the way things are going. But here we are in Chicago where smoking on the train is an executive order that they want to take this on. And yes, we have had complaints over time. I think it's a good move by the mayor to put this front and center. I think that there are already movements, as we mentioned at the top, by aldermen and all the people who wanted to do this as well. So this is a shared idea to try and stop something. And what's really at the core is that the actual experience on the CTA is subpar. Mm-hmm. And at a point, we have to address that. We have to address the fact that one of our crown jewels, I mean, this is really one of the best things about Chicago, this great public transit system that can go every which way and covers big swaths and could cover more, needs to be kind of reined in, especially since COVID. And what you hear over and over is smoking. Marijuana, which is not part of this. There's no executive order on marijuana smoking. Mm-hmm. The police presence on the actual platforms, not in the trains. There's a lot. It keeps going and going and going where people are just not necessarily feeling safe on the train. And that needs to change if you're going to get people to go back and actually get back into the habit of using public transportation.
Yeah, something people have really, really a lot of concerns about.
Yeah, I think for me, one of the main things that needs to be fixed, though, is we need to start with the trains and buses running on time, right. running at a regular interval, because I can't trust taking the bus. So if someone's smoking near me, I don't want that happening. I have asthma. I don't want to be anywhere near it. But I think once there is more regularity and you can trust when the bus or the red line or whatever is coming, then it makes it so there are more people and people are less likely to light up if there's a whole bus of people.
And what this is the executive order just gives funds for education campaigns. And that's the part where you're going to see a lot of placards on the train saying, don't smoke. It's no joke. Don't smoke. Or something like, you know, like whatever they come up with.
They hire you.
Yeah. No, now, yeah, my services are available. But at the end of the day, I'm not, you know, the mayor will say and the police will say, we ticket people for smoking all
right.
the time.
And so the CTA has said right. the tickets have been up lately.
Yeah. It's not that their people are thinking they can get away with it. They're just doing it. And they'll mm-hmm. take the chance. And so there has to be something more. So that's what the mayor's trying to do is can a quirky marketing campaign get people to stop smoking? Justin probably says no to that concept, but maybe it will work.
Yeah, it was interesting seeing, you know, Alderman Bill Conway kind of came out and said, yeah, I had something along these lines already, and we haven't coordinated, but I'm glad to hear that there's an effort underway. So We'll see where this goes. In some other city news, a city council committee met earlier this week to discuss the potential revenue if they legalize video gaming. Experts say not to expect a windfall, but Alder people were a little bit skeptical. Here's some of Alderman Andre Vasquez.
People play games, like I said, the gas stations, they play them on their phones. People go to the casino because people going to casino want the experience more than just the gaming part. And so if we're in a world where you're not losing any headcount of who's going to these places and they're ultimately making revenue off of the experience and you're seeing this growth in VGT, it kind of makes sense to expand all possible opportunities.
Okay, so, you know, how about that, Maggie? Are they saying it's not a zero-sum game here? You know, we can do this, but are Alder people being overly optimistic about the potential revenue here, maybe because the city's, you know, fiscal situation is so dire?
Yeah, absolutely they are. I haven't seen, there's video gaming all over the suburbs, and you haven't seen all these suburbs turn into palaces. You haven't seen these places just become the greatest places on earth just because they happen to have video gaming. They still have problems in the schools in the suburbs. They still have all kinds of issues. So I feel like it's one more time we go to the gambling trough and it's it hasn't paid off yet. So, like, you know, what are we even doing here?
Yes, absolutely. You're right. And it was 2018, 2019 where they said, you know what, we're going to have a really shiny new casino. Chicago's finally going to get one. And the revenue on that's going to blow your mind. And what happened? Well, as you've seen the last couple years, it's not anywhere near where they adjust. And now we're delays in building the actual spot and all that goes in. What it says at the end of the day is that, as you mentioned, this idea that we're going to find the revenue we need out of gambling, that we're going to take advantage of video poker or video gaming or an actual casino, it doesn't come to fruition. And I think we've had this conversation in the city a couple of times now where we keep acting like that's going to, you know what, $100 billion? No, we got that. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. And it's also one more thing that just completely leans usually on the most vulnerable people. Who will spend the most gambling, unfortunately. And so that ends up, we are going to them for a golden goose, and that golden goose does not exist, and it's not a fair thing to ask.
And Vasquez points out, too, which I think is important, is at the end of the day, they're already out there. Right. The video machines, if you've been in any bars and places that maybe that aren't in the timeout guide to Chicago, there's machines in there. So he's talking also about, why don't we just put an extra tax on that? Why don't we collect some of that revenue? Mm-hmm. So it's not like he's thinking about outfitting every Chipotle with a... Maybe that's the case.
Maybe they haven't gone far enough. Like when you go into a lot of the Cook County suburbs, there is not a place you can go to without at least four or five machines and somebody, you know, playing poker and stuff like that. And it just, honestly, it just makes it kind of icky.
And also to bring up the difference in revenue that would come from these video games versus a dedicated casino. And so with a little bit of reporting, it's like 20% of, per se, Bally's in Chicago would go towards the city versus with these video games it being 5%. And when with a lot of this issue, when you think about the idea of if you build it, they'll come, but it comes down to building it. Right. And as we've seen with Bally's, just how much it takes to actually get it going. And I think it's gonna take a lot when it comes to just Chicago gambling base, you could say, to unlearn the behavior of going outside the city to gamble. Because you have casinos in Northwest Indiana. Mm-hmm. You have video games in the suburbs. And so it's gonna take a lot for Bally's to get up and running, and then something that's a successful infrastructure for video games in the city to make people seriously consider this versus just driving 30 minutes for something that's proven to have a better time.
Or take a bus, because there's these
shuttle buses.
They're bringing shuttle buses all into the city. You don't even have to drive yourself to go to Hammond.
They make it very easy. And of course, this all comes as, you know, we heard the mayor saying, we're not going to have a property tax, coming right on the heels of, you know, his CFO saying, well, it's likely that we're going to have one. I mean, how tough of a budget season do you think they're sort of bracing themselves for coming up and trying to think ahead of, like, what are the options we have here?
I think we're looking at an extremely difficult budgeting season. We've seen it the past few cycles where it's just rough, hard negotiations. I think last year was very challenging, and I don't see any signs that that's going to get easier. I think Mayor Johnson isn't necessarily the same style of mayor that we had in years past, where it was just kind of a check mark for the city council to get things through. And that's making everything a little more difficult.
All right, well, let's talk about some more fun stuff then. How the city doesn't have any money. Metra is trying to lure some passengers back with the possible return of the cafe cars. Maggie, do you think a big splash like this could, you know, help boost the ridership that they're still looking for?
I mean, I love taking Metra, so I wish everybody would just join me. But, you know, if you want to give me some snacks and maybe a little glass of wine, like, I'm down with that. Let's try it.
Okay. As someone who rides the Metro, here's my question. Every time I ride the Metro, nobody's talking to each other. There isn't this communal, let's all hang out in a car. Everyone wants to sit down.
But I don't want to talk to anybody. I want to go have a glass of wine and go back to my seat.
The idea of the cafe is, hey, everyone's, you know, they have a photo for, you know, like the idea that everyone's going to be standing and drinking their coffee and, hey, good to see you. Yeah. Good to see you. Good to see you.
Yeah.
And you're like, on the Metro, you're pretty much like, I don't want to see anybody and I don't want to talk. So how do you get people out of that? We were talking about habits. How do you get people out of that habit? Now, you know, they'll harken back to the bar cars. The bar cars of the Metro heyday before 2008, before they ended, again, not a place where everybody's hanging around having a swinging Great Gatsby time. it was a bar car, meaning everyone had a drink. It was like quiet and like, yeah, sometimes I think we like to the revisionist history when it comes to what that was, because that wasn't necessarily the heyday, and we'll see how it goes. But anything you can do to actually have a good time on transit, I guess, is better than smoking.
Yeah, people on the train home from downtown, like, I need a drink before I get back to the house.
Yeah, I'm very curious of will that be a thing, the Metro pregame or the Metro happy hour, because when I think about my times on Metro, it's not really that long. But when I do think about people coming in from the suburbs where they have a longer commute, it's like if you have to be at work at 9 and you get on a train at 7, are you really trying to have a social hour on that commute into the city?
You want a great social hour for Metro? Go on Friday, Saturday of Lollapalooza weekend. And you roll suburbs and come in from the suburbs. And it is I think that's the bar car.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think people are already pre-gaming on the Metro. It just depends on what hour you're there.
I pre-gamed on my way up to Ravinia. Other people have had a bottle of wine on the way up to Ravinia. So,
that's the classy way to do it.
Yes. And I definitely had a glass and not chugging from the bottle.
No,
I wouldn't do that.
Please, Maggie, have some dignity. All right, well, Michael, in the story that seems like it won't go away, no matter how much we might want it to, Jussie Smollett is set to be the subject of a new documentary, and he says it might cast him in a new light. What did we hear?
I never thought that on Monday, I did not wake up thinking I was going to spend the day with Jussie Smollett. But you never know with this line of work we're in.
The beauty of being a reporter.
So, yes, he brought up at the Chicago Torture Justice Center a Netflix documentary that was announced on Tuesday. And with that, this is the first documentary that he's actively involved in. And he said that investigative journalists have FOIA'd and gotten what he is describing as the actual footage of him being jumped in 2019. And he says that, in short, it's going to corroborate everything he has said for almost the last 7 years.
Wow.
So that leaves a lot of questions. And when I asked, he said,
"Why didn't your defense attorneys do this?"
He said he would not comment further, but he did comment on why it wasn't included in the trial. He claims that it was received too late for the trials, days before the trial, and that his attorneys already had a defense strategy that did not fit that. But a lot of people may ask the question, well, if you have smoking gun evidence, there's room, potentially. So there's a lot to be determined, but this documentary, we'll have to wait and see.
I will be waiting for you to watch that and tell me what is in it, please.
I'm not giving it my viewership.
Well, Kelly, as expected, we got the official word NASCAR is headed to San Diego for its 4th of July street race. Do you think the door is open for them to come back to Chicago someday, maybe on a less busy weekend?
Absolutely, and I think that's what the city is hoping for. I believe that the mayor and smaller people behind this had said that they were looking at negotiating an alternate weekend when they could come. You know, originally they were here during the 4th of July weekend, which extremely busy time in Chicago. It was shutting down, portions of downtown, the lakefront area. And so I think that the city is looking for something that will just be a little easier to manage and easier for folks to get around. So I think the door is still open for them to return.
What's missing in this conversation is that Chicago has the upper hand. Mm. NASCAR needs a major market like Chicago. That's why they came here. That's why they made the deal, the whole bit. So the idea that Chicago wants to move them off what has become a little bit of a difficult weekend for the NASCAR street race with all the other things that are happening.
Yeah.
I think it came to a head this year, especially with the fireworks being on different days, mm-hmm. and everyone's sort of like, what's downtown? What's happening right now? Chicago is a major market for NASCAR. It's a major city. They want to tap into these big cities. They want to tap into areas they haven't tapped into before, California, Illinois, New York City area. So they want to be here. So I do think that the NASCAR will look in the mirror and say, you know, maybe the 4th of July isn't our weekend. Maybe it's September or maybe it's whatever. And we'll get back our taste of Chicago and our 16-inch softball diamonds down at Grant Park, which have been taken away by the NASCAR race.
But you're not bitter about it.
No, not at all.
I really hope that when looking at San Diego, it's going to be at a naval base. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be in downtown San Diego.
Right. That seems like a more logical place for it.
Yeah.
Right. And so I really hope that should it come back to Chicago, they can figure out a place that can be less disruptive. Because, yes, the Loop, Grant Park, that stretch is very iconic, but it's 4th of July weekend. And being completely honest, my family wanted to come visit the city 4th of July weekend. I had to be honest with them that it now is not the time. And so we ended up doing the following weekend, but there's a lot of people who want to tour this city, want to visit this city for 4th of July weekend, but any native will tell you when NASCAR's here, it's not worth the time of day.
Don't they know who the Lip Trots are? Come on.
No, this will not do. One word, January.
Yeah.
Right? You know,
right? Add a little extra to it.
Sliding around in the ice and snow. Right.
They've done it in the rain.
Drive down Ashland and let me see how you navigate those potholes.
Have
you
fun.
Know, let's see it.
Yeah, go on. I dare you, tough guy. All right, well, Maggie, Angel Reese notched a couple notable stats recently.
Yes.
Not only a double-double, also a technical that puts her in line for a possible suspension. What's our girl up to? Walk us through it.
Well, honestly, at the moment, she didn't play yesterday because she's having some back issues. So she does have that issue. I do think Angel has one of those problems of, like, people already know that she's going to talk back to the refs, so then the refs are looking for it. And so there are times when she gets called for technicals that I'm absolutely shocked. But yeah, if she does get another one within the season and there's still a whole lot more of the season to play, she will be suspended for a game.
Yeah, it's kind of tough when they're watching, you know, watching you like a hawk.
Yes.
Well, you had a piece that I really liked about a WNBA tradition folks might not know about. Tell us about Camp Day.
So Camp Days are throughout the WNBA season, like once when we get probably to late June, teams will start having games that start at like 11 o'clock noon so that day camps and youth basketball teams can come, and they're very loud and the kids get so excited, and every time they say, I bet you can get louder, the kids absolutely can. I was wearing earplugs for most of the game, but it's also like it's just a high energy thing. And I saw a reply from somebody who had brought their kid to a Minnesota Lynx game, and the kid said, you know, Nafisa Collier was playing a game for the kids, just for us. And like, how can you not love something like that?
That's awesome.
That's a tradition. That's been going on since the All-State Arena and things. Yeah. I remember my family being involved in that. I mean, that if you park district camps, things like that.
Oh, yeah. And they have a blast, and they're all in their matching T-shirts, and it's a fun thing.
That's when you know when the WNBA got too big. That's when they're like, no more camp stuff. You know, only prime time.
Honestly, they
don't.
I hope
they keep it around.
There have already been GMs talking about, because there's plenty of places that are already selling out all the time, already making big numbers. They don't necessarily need Camp Days anymore now.
Yeah.
But it's such an important tradition, and honestly, the players like get a kick out of it and everything. So, I don't see it going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah,
good inspiration.
You can't let go of all the traditions.
Yes.
Well, speaking of camp, Justin, I'm not going to fake enthusiasm about it, but you've been keeping an eye on Bears training camp. What do you see in there?
Oh, clunky start for our Chicago Bears. New coach, optimism through the roof, and the first 3 days of practice has seen some pretty bad football. The team doesn't know where to line up. They seem to be out of sorts with what the new coach wants to put in. They're already, the national pundits are saying maybe this is a mistake. We're 3 days into camp. It's ridiculous, but again, that's what comes with the territory when you're talking about all the expectations that are on the Chicago Bears' shoulders. They got this new coach, Ben Johnson. They think it's going to be the Detroit Lions 2.0, and we've got Caleb Williams is in his second year. This should be a no-brainer. They should be zipping the ball over, and instead what we're seeing is they can't get they're throwing interceptions. They can't get lined up right. At one point, I think on the first day, Ben Johnson actually pulled the first team offense off the field. They were that bad. And so that's not a great start, but better now.
All right.
Right? Better now than in September when the season starts.
We'll take it, but we're not going to pull any of you off the field. You were all great tonight, but we are about out of time. So our thanks to Michael Liptrot, Kelly Bauer, Justin Kaufman, and Maggie Hendricks. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that's our show for this Friday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan. That's at WTTW.com/newsletter. Now for the Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. Okay, well, we're getting reports this week. Wrigley Field is expected to host the MLB All-Star Game in 2027. There's a presser scheduled for next week. Some of the Cubs in the city have been angling for quite a while, but still some work to be done, right, before they can actually do this thing.
Yeah, the amount of locker or clubhouse space, media room space.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm working to preserve the dignity and rights of all individuals.